Hey, it's Zach Lowe, host of the Lowe Post Podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of SportsCenter with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode was one I thought you would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
An Adebayo eruption.
That was ridiculous. Unbelievable power and athleticism. What a crusher.
King me. Oh, king me, Bam Adebayo.
That was the sound of Miami Heat center Bam Adebayo doing what he does best, destroying souls on the court. Now in his third year, Adebayo's had a breakout season, earning his first All-Star berth and leading the Heat to a surprising start. Today, ESPN's Zach Lowe brings us the story of one of the NBA's rising superstars and tells us why not everyone saw this coming. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Friday, February 14th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Hi, Zach.
What's up, Mina?
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. I like coming on. This is my third time. That means I'm not blowing it. That means whatever the numbers say, I'm not blowing it.
Zach Lowe is an NBA insider for ESPN. His latest piece is a profile of Miami Heat All-Star Bam Adebayo. Zach, we're coming up on the All-Star game, and one of the first-timers this year is Bam Adebayo, the Miami Heat center who's in his third season and has really emerged as a star. Why did you decide to write about him?
I like to write one or two of these a year. And I really top out at two because they're so time consuming and they take so long to report, as you know. But I like writing about people. It's one of the easiest and hardest things to do, right? I've come to find that the sweet spot to really hit in the NBA for players is like between the 15th and 40th best player in the league. Like the top 15 guys, you just don't get access to them unless you've known them for years and years and years. And anything after 35 or 40, you run into like, well, why am I reading about this guy? Is he that interesting for casual fans? It has to be a player that I like as a player. I don't want to write about someone whose game I just think is empty calories or whatever. Like, I want to write about someone who I think is really good and maybe underappreciated. That's the kind of sweet spot of guy for me.
So why do you like Bam as a player?
Big guys who can pass are like my siren song. I love big guys who can pass. And when you watch this guy play defense, even more than the defense and the speed, honestly, is the rebounding.
Joe Harris for three. And bam, oh, he timed his jump perfectly. Flew right through the clouds for the Heat's first defensive rebound of the afternoon.
He gets these rebounds where there's like four people under the rim jostling for position. And they all jump. And then from somewhere else flies in this gigantic guy with these hands that must be made of, I don't know, whatever is the strongest possible material you can make. And the ball goes into this crowd of four guys, and then this other guy just snatches it away like it's nothing. He makes the kind of plays where they're winning plays, and if they come at the right moment in a game, they're like a gut punch to the other team.
So, Zach, you head down to Miami to spend time with Bam and his friends and his family to get a sense of who he is. Where does his story begin?
It begins with his father leaving their family when his mother wanted to move to rural North Carolina and out of Newark, New Jersey. And they lived in a single wide trailer in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina. And his mom worked as a cashier at like a meat grocery store kind of thing, earning about $12,000 a year after taxes. And then all of a sudden, she had a son who was 12 years old and 6'6 and could dunk.
What was it like for him, you know, growing up in that trailer with his mom and no one else?
You know, when you're a kid, you just don't think it's anything, right? Like, you don't think it's different or whatever. He had a sense that it was hard for his mom and that her schedule was crazy and that they didn't see each other much because their schedules didn't overlap the right way. But he was happy. He had a lot of friends. You know, it was fine. But he did say by age 13 or 14, you begin to realize that this is a hard life. That this adult, like who you just kind of looked at as your mom, like every other mom, has a job and leaves the house and all that, that it's hard for her. and that they don't have a lot, and that she works really, really hard for what they have. And that's what drove him. That's where he says he got his ambition and his anger and his desire to succeed, was when he realized, my mom's life is hard. She's tired a lot. And I see that, and I want to change that.
When did it first become apparent to him and his family that playing basketball might be a viable career for him?
Once he started playing organized basketball, which is not till like 12, 13, 14, he picked things up really fast, and he had good natural instincts and good natural footwork. By 14, 15, he's on the map of all the big colleges. And by the time he's a junior, Mark Gottfried is helicoptering in to recruit him to NC State and like landing the helicopter on the field of their school.
What was he like as a high school player?
A monster, an absolute monster. You know, he would have regular 40-20 games. You know, just like he was just huge. These teams in rural North Carolina couldn't do anything with a 6'8 dude who could dunk. But he was incredibly unselfish. He loved playing point guard. He loved passing to people and keeping them involved. He didn't want to just be the guy averaging 40-50 a game and putting up numbers. There was a story about a guy on the end of the bench who finally got in a game, and all Bam did was get offensive rebounds and try to pass him the ball so he could score.
So Bam grows up in a trailer with a single mom and discovers he's freakishly good at basketball. When it comes time to select a college, he chooses...
I like to announce that I'm taking my talents to the University of Kentucky.
How does that go at first?
So when big guys get to Kentucky, and this was most, I think, famously done with Karl Anthony Towns, Cal says to them, dude, it's cool you can shoot threes. Like, it's cool you can pass and, like, run the offense, but, like, we have De'Aaron Fox. We have Malik Monk. You don't get to do any of that here.
My thing for him is lead the nation. Go get every ball. And then let's really get you to play the way you're capable of playing.
You're going
to
set screens. You're going to post up. You're going to get rebounds. You're going to play defense. You're going to do big man stuff. Because if you go to the NBA, you're going to have to do that stuff well before you get to do the other stuff. And so, Bam, that's cool. Like, you brought the ball up. You played point guard. Like, you're not going to get to do that here. He would just say, yeah, you know, I'm just going to do my work. Like, I trust Cal. Cal has a record of getting these big guys drafted really high. I'm working in practice behind closed doors on all the other fancy stuff. Whatever it takes for us to win, whatever Cal says is good for me, I'm going to do, and like, I'm not going to get frustrated by it.
So while he was doing all the big man stuff in games, he was working on his guard skills at practice?
Yep, in drills with Kenny Payne, who's an assistant at Kentucky, who's very close to them. At night, he would come back to the gym and do that. He would shoot jump shots, which I don't know if he even shot a single three at Kentucky. I haven't checked. Even if scouts didn't see all of it, the coaches, you know, when scouts would come visit or pick their brains about Bam and whether they should draft him, they would all tell them, just be aware, what you're seeing in games is not the full extent of what this kid can do.
Coming up, how a pre-draft workout in Miami paved the way for Bam to head to the Heat. So the 2017 draft approaches, and one team that had their eye on Bam was the Miami Heat. How did he catch their attention?
Chet Kammerer, who was the Heat's director of scouting, now is in a more senior position, and was sort of, he's their ears on the ground first, and was Bam's probably biggest fan first. And Chet remembers Bam coming to the workout and Chet asking him, what could you shoot on corner threes, do you think? And Bam said, I could hit 60% of them. And they said, okay, cool, because one thing we do here is we have everyone shoot 50 corner threes, 25 from each corner. Bam's like, all right, cool, let's do it. And he hit 31 out of 50, which is 62%. So he proved himself right.
Zach, you wrote in your story about a particularly grueling workout the Heat put Bam through. What happened?
The Heat are famous for having some of the hardest workouts physically. They put you through a lot of drills and a lot of running and a lot of sprinting, and, you know, Bam can do all that. And then they got to the end, and the drill was a pick-and-roll drill where he had to switch onto the guards in attendance and stay in front of them. And Bam was, like, offended by the whole conceit of the drill. Like, he was offended that the Heat needed evidence that he could do this. And he turned to Spoelstra and Riley and everyone who's there and said, swore at them, said, you must have me confused with somebody else. You got me all up here. You got me confused. And then he would switch on to Justin Jackson, and Justin Jackson would go nowhere because a 6'8 monster with a 7-foot-plus wingspan and quick feet was barricading every path. And he would be muttering under his breath to Dan Craig, the assistant who was running the drill. Oh, you didn't think I could do this, blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was interviewing Spo, who was the first one to tell me this story, on the record at least. And he's describing this, and I said, well, Coach, I assume he was, like, laughing. Like, he was laughing. It was good-natured trash talk. And Spo was like, oh, no, no. He was serious. He was angry. And I looked at Pat, and I was like, is this guy maybe a little crazy? Like, is this okay that he's doing this? And the other guys who had been scouting him for a lot longer said, no, this is the Miami Heat DNA in him coming out. This is just how he is. You got to like this. This is good.
What did Pat Riley see in him?
Pat just absolutely loved his personality.
When we sat and talked to him, you know, for an hour, it's just, you get sort of blown away by his story and his background and his motivation and you know, why he is here.
For he was the most athletic big man at the combine and one of the most athletic big men ever tested. And so they looked at that and they looked at what everyone had told him about his work ethic and his character. And they said, character plus athleticism is something we can work with. Whatever this kid's ceiling is going to be, he's going to hit it because of who he is as a human being. Pat said, "In this kid at age 18 was a grown-ass man." And you could tell Pat loved that.
So Bam ends up in Miami. He's stuck at first behind Hassan Whiteside. When does he first start sort of gaining traction and changing minds about him as a player?
The Heat knew he was good. And it stressed Spo out that he wasn't playing him and couldn't find minutes for him. And then there was a game against Cleveland where they were just getting destroyed. So garbage time extended for a very, very long time. And Bam's one of these guys who's like, garbage time's not garbage time for him. Garbage time is not like, oh, I'm going to shoot threes and dribble through my legs and do all this crazy stuff. Like, I'm going to go out and kill people. That's what I do. I'm going to go out and dunk on people's heads and get rebounds and block shots. And he scored 19 points on 7 shots. And he claims, and the Heat claim too, that he set some Miami rookie record for most field goals and free throws without a miss in a single game, which is like one of these obscure records that only local broadcasters will ever mention. But Bam said it and is proud of it. And from that game forward, Spo was like, I got to find some time for this guy. Like, he's ready to help our team.
And that's about when he also sort of made an impact on Dwayne Wade, right?
He made an impact on Dwayne Wade's head.
Adebayo with another crushing slam dunk and a foul.
Dwayne Wade told me, man, I tried to go up and get it, and I didn't have a chance. And from that moment on, Dwayne said, I was a fan.
What has their relationship been like?
Dwayne loves him. Dwayne says he watches the Bam Show all the time, and they have a bet, and they were very adamant they would not disclose the terms of the bet to me. But it's about Bam averaging something for the season, some kind of stat line. And I think Bam is probably going to win the bet, but he was not going to disclose the terms.
What is it about his personality and his competitiveness that jives with the vaunted Heat culture?
Hashtag Heat culture. He's a little bit nasty. And the Heat, they like guys with a little bit of an edge. And they'll even say this about Alonzo, who now has worked for the team forever. They'll say, I don't think Alonzo Mourning would have worked in every place in the NBA. He had a little nasty to him. And Bam, as friendly as he is and as gregarious as he can be, he's a little nasty. He wants to win his individual matchup every game. All these guys are super competitive, right? Like, every one of these profiles has the details about, oh, he needs to win it every board game. And when we play pool, he throws a tantrum if he doesn't win. Bam has that, but Bam has always directed it to, I want to break my opponent's will. The guy across from me, I don't want him to score a basket. And I want to make my team win. One of the only photos he has of himself playing basketball in his house is of him guarding LeBron, because he was so proud of how he guarded LeBron on a couple of switches.
That was a force by James and a shot clock violation on Cleveland. Good defense by the rookie, Bam Adebayo.
Just, he likes the feeling of, these guys think they can get by me and they can't.
How did that edge manifest itself when they played Minnesota last year?
Well, that was my favorite story in the... maybe my favorite story in reporting on Bam. And I could tell that Kenny Payne was very excited and a little trepidatious to tell the story, but he told it anyway. So it was the Final Four was in Minneapolis last year. Before this national semifinals, the Timberwolves hosted the Heat, which meant Karl-Anthony Towns and Bam Adebayo were in the same city, and the Kentucky coaching staff was also in the same city because everyone goes to the Final Four. And John Calipari and Kenny Payne, who's an assistant with Kentucky, organized a dinner with the two of them and Carl and Bam. And Kenny Payne, I did not know this about him, is apparently a legendary disturber. He enjoys getting under people's skin. So they all sit down to dinner, and Kenny says to Carl Towns, "Hey, Carl, man, just tomorrow in the game, take it easy on my baby Bam. Don't embarrass him." And Carl says, "Well, you know, it's on Eric Spoelstra to send double teams if Bam needs some help." And Kenny said, I could feel Bam's leg shaking under the table. He was so infuriated by this entire conversation. And then the next game, he gave Carl Towns some fits.
Well, Bam knocked it away. Waiters came up with a steal. That's excellent defense from behind Towns.
Towns had 11 turnovers in that game, which is the most he's ever had. And he claims he doesn't. I interviewed Carl. It's not in the story. He claims very little memory of what happened in the game, except he clearly remembers that the Timberwolves won because that's what he wanted to talk about. Now, he's like, 11 turnovers. That seems like a lot of turnovers. I'm like, yeah, you think you would remember that you had 11 turnovers in an NBA game? That's like a lot of turnovers. But he claims like, I don't know.
Well, what does Bam's success mean for the Heat as a team and also the city of Miami?
You know, the Heat traded for Jimmy Butler at age 30, right? So he's going to be their, he's a star, but he's not like their star in the way that Alonzo Mourning or Udonis Haslam or Dwayne Wade were theirs. The Heat and Wade in particular view Bam as sort of the next standard bearer of what it means to be a Miami Heat franchise player. And when Riley says that and Alonzo Mourning says that and Dwayne Wade says that, it's a big, big deal. And you can tell when you bring it up to Bam that it's a big deal to him to hear these people say that about him. It means something to him.
Thanks so much, Zach.
Always a pleasure.
Coming up, the Astros are sorry you're sorry. Here's another story I want you to know. As we discussed on Wednesday, despite the fact that baseball is ripe with fun and exciting new storylines, everyone in the league is still buzzing about the Astros sign-stealing scandal, which took another turn yesterday morning. The team came out and held a press conference, which I imagine was intended to douse the criticism, but instead lit a fire under the hot take cycle, eliciting wrath, criticism, mockery, memes, those modern-day plagues, from every corner of the baseball world. For starters, the Astros trotted out two of their more beloved stars, Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, both of whom delivered rather stilted apologies.
The whole Astros organization and the team feel bad about what happened in 2017. We especially feel remorse for the impact in our fans and the game of baseball.
I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me.
But that wasn't the worst of it. No, the strongest ire was reserved for Astros owner Jim Crane, who not only maintained that he didn't think he should be held accountable, which is not something anyone should ever say out loud, but also had this to say about the team's sign-stealing scheme.
You know, our opinion is, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Less than a minute later, our Jeff Passan followed up to confirm what he heard.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game.
So this is obviously very embarrassing, but it's also extremely revealing and, in my view, the linchpin of this whole thing, because it exposes the central bargain the Astros made. Sure, they lost their manager and their GM and incurred fines and were docked draft picks, but they still won the World Series and no one's taken their rings. Crane clearly believes that if he admits the sign-stealing affected those games in any way, he's acknowledging those rings are tainted. So he won't apologize, like actually apologize, or acknowledge why they did what they did, because his team still came out on top, even if they had to sink to new lows along the way. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Michael Baltierra, Troy Farkas, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, David Sirozzi, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tubinello, and Aaron Vail. I'll talk to you Monday.